1027 Business.
All right, welcome back to Hot Business on Hot 1027. We are speaking today to a real expert in the cryptocurrency space. Now, as some of you guys know, and some of you, no doubt, are invested in some cryptocurrencies, Ethereum, I always wonder if I pronounced that correctly. Ethereum merged about 3 days ago and has subsequently lost like 30% of its value. So to just understand what is happening, we've got, I don't really know how to introduce you, Gio. Gio is a independent trader, has been involved in crypto for some time, and this is kind of what you do. I don't really know how else to, you're not affiliated with anyone or anything. You're just somebody that's really very much an expert on cryptocurrency. Gio, thank you very much for your time and for taking the, you know, time to speak to us tonight.
Thank you, Petri, for having me here.
Okay, I'm sorry to put you on the spot. Not everyone is, but you'll be fine. You'll be fine. So a couple of questions, right? Firstly, I think some of the audience out there obviously do know what cryptocurrencies are. And that, you know, there's a big distinction between legitimate stuff and the scams and all that. And we're not really going to go into all of that today. What we're talking about today is particularly Ethereum, which is a type of cryptocurrency. And there were two different chains that merged. Now, that's as much as I understand about this. Could you maybe just help us understand what that even means?
Yes, sure. So Ethereum, the second largest cryptocurrency by market cap, underwent a major upgrade last week, and the merge is the name that they decided to give the upgrade. And as I understand it, it was a code base that was merged with the original chain, and that's why they opted to call it the merge. I don't know. Should I elaborate on the details of this upgrade for you?
I don't understand. I can see him. He's sitting there, Timmy, in the traffic going, what are you talking about? A code base that was put into the original chain?
Yes.
It seems to me like I'm a Labrador. I don't understand.
So what Ethereum and its community wanted to do is they wanted to change the consensus mechanism for this blockchain. And they changed it from something called proof of work to proof of stake. And all this is just a fancy way of saying that they changed the method that all the participants on the network, the method that they use to determine and agree which transactions are valid and which transactions are invalid. And they also use the consensus mechanism to agree who owns how much Ethereum on the network.
All right. And just to break that down a little further, all of this stuff is a matter of public record in this irrefutable chain of events or chain of transactions called the blockchain. So that's why it's important that you have consensus that most of the people involved in this agree to make these changes in how records are kept, basically.
That's exactly right.
Okay. I got you. So what does it mean now? So now you've gone from proof of work, where my understanding of that is if you can prove that you've done a certain amount of work, which is essentially process transactions on behalf of other people, then you can prove how much how many coins you own, I guess, versus to now proof of stake, which is just I can prove how much I have.
Maybe we should start with proof of work. That's the consensus mechanism that Bitcoin uses. And the best way to explain that is think of it as a race. You have miners, and the miner's job was always to keep a copy of the blockchain, which is just keep a copy of all the transactions that have ever been done so that we can verify who owns what. But to do this transaction processing, whenever a new batch of transactions arrive, the miners take their computers, and their computers basically all run a race. And in this race, the computers work as hard as they can all the time to guess a number. And once one computer guesses the correct number, it's then able to unlock a certain puzzle. So all the other computers can make sure, yes, this is the correct number, and okay, my computer or your computer was the first one to get there. So you've won the race for this block of transactions. You get to add this transaction or this block of transactions to the chain, mm-hmm. and you in the blockchain, right? And your
and then reward, that's distributed to everybody else, and then that's the official block, the next piece.
Yes. And your reward for your computer winning that race is you are given the new Bitcoin that is issued. And that is what we call proof of work. Right. And the essence there is every computer in the network that's racing is working as hard as it can all of the time, which, as you can imagine, is quite redundant and it requires a lot of energy.
Yeah.
And then we can compare that to proof of stake. And with proof of stake, we don't have mining. And remember now, Ethereum used to be proof of work up until last week. And now it's switched over to this proof of stake consensus mechanism. And now if you wish to validate transactions, you have to put down a stake, basically, and that means you have to commit a certain amount of your own ether, and you have to lock it away, and you need at least 32 ether, and you lock that ether in a box, and that is now the act of staking. And while your ether is locked away, you're allowed to be in the running to validate transactions. And then what the network does is it automatically selects a validator, and it decides on one validator. Okay, Pietri, you've been staking your ether for a week. Today, it's your turn to validate a block of transactions, and then your computer does the work while all the other computers relax, basically. And the network selects a validator, not quite at random. If you are staking more than 32 Ether, then you have a greater chance of being selected. And if you are staking Ether for a longer time than others have, then you also have a slightly better chance of being selected. So the more you stake and the longer you stake, the more then you are regarded as having more invested in the network, and then we assume that you have less incentive to be dishonest and to approve fraudulent transactions.
Okay,
if that makes any sense.
Yeah. I'm gonna ask questions here because there's stuff that I wonder about. So, when you're doing proof of work stuff, like how Bitcoin works, right? There's this algorithm. You have to solve it, and whoever solves it first, you get to your group of transactions. So you actually physically process the transactions first. Then you solve the algorithm. If you can solve the algorithm or the puzzle first, then your group of transactions are blocked together and put on the chain, and that's the official thing. And so it necessarily follows that there's a little bit of randomness in it, but also the more powerful the computer that's doing the processing, the higher the likelihood of you essentially earning the reward, right? But
with proof of work, yes.
With proof of work, yes. Now it's moving to whoever's got the biggest balance gets to process the transactions. That sounds, I mean, how different is that to whoever's got the biggest computer, right? It's just, I don't know if it sounds a bit less secure to me.
It definitely raises questions. Is it not going to turn into a network of rich folks or the elite that decide which transactions to approve and which transactions to censor? The jury is out on that one. I could also argue just that 32 Ethereum, which is the minimum amount that you have to stake, I'll let the people decide. I'm not sure how I feel about that, because where will you ever be able to draw the line between maximum and minimum staking rules? The fact is you should stake something, otherwise you have no incentive to be honest at all. So we can't let anybody stake if we want to move to a proof of stake system. So we need to draw the line somewhere. And ultimately, you don't need specialized hardware to do proof of stake, where with proof of work, it's arguable that if you wanted to remain competitive, you had to invest in hardware. But the question is open. You've got a good point.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. This stuff is ultra complicated. So, yeah, I think I don't want to just harp on about this like proof of work, proof of stake thing the whole time. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more to it than that. but I'm still sort of just trying to wrap my head around the differences here. So if you have essentially what's happening in the Bitcoin space is people are creating pools, because having one Antminer, for example, or one, you know, set of GPUs, graphic processing units, or, you know, fancy computer that basically crunches numbers, your chances of winning are like really small. So what happens is people, you know, band together and they say, we are one pool. And if one of us, one of our computers manages to solve the equation first, we'll share the reward evenly among all of us, right? Or proportionally among all of us, depending on how many computers you have in the pool. And, or how much processing power you have in the pool. And that makes sense to me, but there's also this like random factor. There's nobody cherry picking transactions. Transactions are just processed. Can you do that on a proof of work thing where you say, well, this transaction from Pietri to Gio, I don't want to process that transaction? You can't do that, can you?
So, we are definitely coming to the very fringes of my knowledge of the matter, but, I believe the miners do select which transactions. In fact, when we saw the blockchains becoming so congested in both the 2017 market cycle and the 2021 market cycle, it confused people. It was very counterintuitive when people were trying to do transactions. You have to select a fee to pay for your transaction that goes to the miner. Mm. And people really didn't understand that when they contributed their fee, for some reason, their transactions still weren't being processed, because what the miners were doing is they were going to the pool, the memory pool, and they were just taking – when they arrived to select a batch of transactions to include in the block, they would obviously just – they're incentivized to take the transactions with the highest transaction fees. And for some strange reason, people couldn't understand, my transaction has been waiting for 2 days, and why am I not included in a block? Because you keep being cut off by other people who are just willing to pay more. Okay, but when will my transaction be processed? When there's capacity.
You know, so I'll tell you a story here. So I bought an NFT, right? And the NFT cost, I don't know, $12 or something like that. And the gas fee, which was an Ethereum-based fee for mm-hmm. – obviously, you know what it is. I'm just sort of breaking it down. But the gas fee for the transaction was something like $200. And I was like, there's no way I'm going to pay $200 for a transaction that's worth $12. You know, so I said, I'll pay $5. And I think it's like a year later, I'm still waiting for the transaction to go through.
Wow.
It's crazy. Okay, so now I guess my question is really around how much of a difference does this make, and what's the way forward for Ethereum here? Because we can assume that most people agreed to do the merge, which is why it took place, right? Or most of the people that own Ethereum, at least, agreed to do the merge. But the price, I almost say the share price, the price of Ethereum has since dropped like 30%. So, I mean, what gives?
Okay, so there I'm definitely speculating, but I think everything needs to be viewed in the macro, through the macro lens at the moment, and all risk assets have been suffering over the last 12 months or so, and we often have a buy the rumor, sell the news type of thing, where, and since this merge was planned for many months, even years, it could be argued that market participants were accumulating Ethereum in the run-up to the merge. After the merge occurred, whether they're happy with the results or not, they've decided to take some profits. And from the bottom of about $900, give or take, Ethereum did make it all the way up to about $2,000 before the merge. And I suppose we're just seeing some profit taking and the market coming back to normal. We've actually seen some relative strength in the Bitcoin market. So maybe it could be argued that perhaps certain Bitcoin holders were converting their holdings into Ethereum to make sure they catch some of that upside, and now they're just cycling back into Bitcoin. But that's open for speculation.
I guess time will tell. But I think you make a very fair point, and this is something that I've said a lot of times as well. Markets at the moment, and for the last, 10 months in, it's been almost 10 months at least, it's tough out there, and if it's a risk asset and people need liquidity, they are going to sell it. And I guess the cryptocurrencies are not immune to that. And also, if you look at, you know, yes, it's very dramatic that it's fallen 30% over the last couple of days, but we have to also remember that these are cryptocurrencies. Less than 12 months ago, it was $4,800 for one, right? So dropping from 1.6 to 1.3 isn't that bad, right?
It doesn't need a reason for that. Yeah,
it doesn't need a reason.
You shouldn't need to believe that there's a reason.
It's just a big seller.
There's a reason for this type of stuff.
Yeah. All right, and I think the overarching, we're out of time, unfortunately, Joe, so we're going to have to wrap up here. But I think the overarching message here is if you are getting involved with cryptocurrencies, make sure that you use a reputable, trusted exchange. There are two that I will endorse. I'm sure that Joe will echo these sentiments, is Valar and Luno. Those are the only two. And if you have to go offshore, like Bitstamp. But don't let people tell you that they're going to, you know, trade your cryptocurrencies for you. There are some cryptocurrency arbitrage companies that are also, worth it. Future Forex is one. Revix is another. But outside of that, don't let someone on Instagram tell you, oh, pay me in Bitcoin and I'll trade you. I'll make you a millionaire. Just, you know, send me your Bitcoin. That's the worst idea you could have. But yes, anyway, on that note, Gio, thank you very, very much for your time. I appreciate it, and I hope you have a wonderful evening. And that was Gio from nowhere, really. He's an independent trader from Cape Town. and just a good old-fashioned cryptocurrency expert that's been in the game for a long time. Thank you, Gio.
Thanks. Hot 1027 Business.